Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
10 milligrams of diazepam, please.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 11, Collision Course. And now here are your hosts, one coming from the left, the other from the right, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. You see, Tara.
Yes.
They are on a collision course.
Got it. Dave saw me frown and reacted in real time. This is the experience you have when you record in the same room. Hello, Sarah.
Am I the right wing?
I don't like I'm this not the right. We know that.
At all. I quit.
Maybe one of us is coming from the top and one from the bottom. Who's to say? Anyway, hello.
Hello.
Before we get into today's episode, let's talk briefly about Again With This episode 12, which is going to be dropping June 26th. Now, we had a topic all picked out. In fact, I was about to go and write up my notes for it, and then we got a special request from Watch Your Feet. I'm going to drop a name. Karina Longworth, the host of You Must Remember This, who wrote to us, and I quote, "Can you guys please talk about Lindsay Price's appearances on Celebrity Watch Party and also answer the question, is the Australian chef she married kind of a Steve Sanders? ?! So, just for her and all of you as well, we're going to be discussing Lindsay Price's appearances on Celebrity Watch Party, which you can watch on Hulu or on the Fox app. And though note that due to our taping schedule, we will have only seen the first 5 episodes. So if Lindsay really wilds out in episode 6 or later, we apologize in advance for not being able to comment on it. But this was a real journey that Karina put us on, so you should look forward to this.
And I feel like we might not be on the same path with it. I don't know.
We'll see. Oh, I'm interested. I mean, we'll get to it, but just a preview is that like 3 minutes into it, I DM'd Karina on Twitter and was like, I'm furious. She was like, I said, you're basically a Black Mirror villain right now because you forced me into doing this. So like on multiple platforms, I was yelling at her. But, you know, we'll have things to say. So, yeah, look out for that on June 26th. And like I said, Celebrity Watch Party on Hulu or the Fox app or Fox, probably on Fox Demand. Shall we get into today's episode of Melrose Place, Sarah?
Yes, let us do so.
All right, let us start with our C-plot. Sydney's work friend introduces her to some very fancy new people. At Shooters, Sydney and baby Gina Gershon, whose name here we finally find out is Ellen, are setting up for lunch, Sydney complaining that everyone in LA is out for themselves, and Ellen replying that she's a bit young to be so cynical, but guesses she has boyfriend problems. Sydney comments on Ellen's watch, saying that people think it's a fake, which is how you know without them actually saying the name, it's supposed to be a Rolex. So Ellen has to show her how the second hand sweeps so that you know it's real. She says it was a gift. And then after a beat, she invites Sydney to a Hollywood A-list party. It'll take Sydney's mind off her boyfriend. Sydney is convinced. And that night, Sydney knocks on Jane's door. Clip 2.
What is it, Sydney?
Hi. Don't be mad, okay? But see, this friend of mine asked me to this fancy party tonight, and I'm really jazzed, but I've been looking in my closet, and the only dress I have that's even half nice is kind of out of date. So I was wondering if you would maybe like to come, and if you have a dress that I could borrow, just for the night. I mean, your designs are so cool, and I'll take real good care of it, I promise.
You amaze me.
Is that good?
No. And now I don't want to go with you. And no, you cannot borrow one of my dresses. Good night, Sydney.
You're just plain mean. You know that, Jane? I make one mistake, and Miss Perfect is going to hold it against me for the rest of my life.
It wasn't a mistake, Sydney. You slept with my husband. Now leave me alone.
I mean, I can't be Team Jane because
no.
She doesn't fucking check the peephole before she answers the door. Like,
yeah.
Why? You know that Sydney is never going to get it either, so why don't you get it and stop answering the door?
Well, that's A. B is that she says, you slept with my husband, which by the time Sydney slept with him, he wasn't. Like, you know, it's not great that Sydney slept with Michael, but it's really more of Kimberly's beef to have with her than Jane's, you know, technically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
But, I mean, if the, like, secondary beef is like, so I know you're not speaking to me, but can I borrow a dress that you made? Like, you have to know that this is how it's always going to go with her.
Yeah. And yet, it's already such a hallmark of Sydney's character that, like, she's so oblivious that she's like, well, if I just act like everything's fine, it'll be fine. And it never is.
Yeah. And then she's like, why are you being so mean? And, like, I think she genuinely is, like, hurt.
Right.
Jane is still pissed at her, but it's like, it's because you suck.
Yeah. It's... really is. Sydney, unfortunately, should have borrowed something from her friend Ellen because she looks like a real asshole standing by the pool at night in a mauve floral sundress, which you can see in the visual aids. Psyched as any hayseed to be there. Of course, as we all know from history, the hostess of this party is Christian Alfonso, Hope from Days of Our Lives. But one of her top clients is totally Stephen Nichols, Patch, also from Days.
I totally forgot Patch got sucked into this.
Hey, buddy. The thing is, I was not really a Days watcher. And yet, as soon as I saw him, I was like, wait a minute. So I had to look him up. And sure enough. Anyway.
This has been driving me crazy. Who does he look like from Walking Dead? Why can't I pull that guy's name?
From Walking
Norman
Dead.
Reedus?
Oh, yeah, kind of. Yeah, he looks like Norman Reedus. Sure. I would buy that. He's kind and in this context, he's like halfway between Grant Show and Doug Savant a little bit. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah, kind of.
Plus 10 years, maybe.
Yeah. Patch was my grandma's favorite.
Oh, really?
Favorite. That's... which was like shocking to us. We're like, you're into that? She also had a crush on Ravishing Rick Rude, which she never admitted to, but Patch, she copped it.
I remember that about Rick Rude.
We've been doing this maybe a little too long.
No,
anyway,
it's because I think I tweeted a picture one time of him like posing as himself in a pair of like shorts with himself printed on them with the caption,
the
when
guy.
I retweet myself. And you were like, my grandma's favorite. And I never forgot. Anyway.
How could you?
Here, Hope and Patch are Lauren Etheridge and Carl Kanan. And Carl is the first to scope out Sydney as fresh talent, asking how much. Lauren doesn't know yet, but says Carl has his hands full tonight anyway. And seeing Lauren watching them, Ellen brings Sydney over to make introductions. Sydney is dorkily effusive about the house and the party and how much fun she's having. And apparently Carl is a director or something. I didn't really get an actor vibe from him. He seemed, or maybe producer.
Yeah, director or producer, I think.
He's Sydney says she loves his movies, whatever it is. He's famous enough for her to know who he is. And Lauren pulls Sydney aside for just a little preliminary grooming in clip three.
Sydney, there's some wonderful food inside. Why don't you go in, have a bite, and I'll come by later and introduce you around.
Okay, thanks. I can't believe I just met Carl Kanan.
You'll get a chance to know him better.
That would be great. You know, sometimes I'm kind of a geek. I hope I'm not embarrassing you.
Oh, no. You're perfect.
You're really not, but you can be controlled.
Uh-huh. Yep. So Ellen and Sydney are finishing their shift at Shooters the next day when Lauren rolls in to ask if Sydney would like to go out with Carl tonight. She would, but is incredulous that he wants to go out with her. Lauren says he was very impressed with her and wants to take her out clubbing. Sydney wouldn't know what to say to someone so famous, so Ellen offers to double. She knows a friend of his, and Lauren's all about it. And thank God, Sydney has taken my advice and borrowed a big girl dress from Ellen for their date, which you can also see in the visual aids. And as they come down from Sydney's apartment, Ellen briefs her on what to expect, saying the guys are going to want to go to some club, but that Ellen and Sydney should insist on the Hyena Club because it's much more happening. I only made a note of this because I thought it was going to come up again. It doesn't. Anyway, then Sydney has to cancel on Carl due to drama in the A-plot, which we will get to. For now, let us go over to the B-plot. Allison's crush on Steve. Exposed! Jane has just come back from torturing herself with a pre-work run with Billy and Allison and has invited the latter back to her place for breakfast when Joe comes down. Jane cheerily invites Joe to join them, but obviously it's awkward between Joe and Allison, and Joe declines, though she does nicely ask how things are going for Jane and Robert. Allison then actually tries to talk to Joe, who is like, nope, and takes off. Like, thank God for Joe. Obviously, Jane has to ask what that was about, and Allison tells her a highly edited version of, you know, the whole Steve story, although it does end with her saying that she and Steve kissed, and she says she feels really guilty about it, but that the worst part is that she's still horny for Steve, and through all this, she's totally oblivious of the symphony of faces that Jane is making at all of this, because as a person whose marriage recently ended due to her partner cheating on her, Jane is not inclined to be that empathetic to Allison on this one. Clip 4.
I don't know what to do about it.
You don't, huh? Well, let me give you a few pointers from the front. Don't poach off other women's relationships. Is that clear enough?
Jane... Listen, this is not my fault.
No, you listen. It was never Michael's fault either, or Kimberly's, or anybody's. It was just fate. Well, I don't call it fate. I call it weakness.
This is not the same thing.
Yes, it is. You keep it up, and Billy's going to end up trusting you about as much as Joe does.
Like, how can Allison say this is not the same as what Michael did because they didn't fuck? Because they're not married? Like, it's cheating. It's the same.
Yeah. I mean, also, you were the one who, you were the messenger who got shot when you tried to tell Jane. So
that too.
Like, how short is your memory? I actually only just now remember this myself, so I'm the bitch here. But, like, I am a big proponent of not blaming the other woman for whatever shit went down that your partner was supposed to hew to. But... I'm always happy to see whiny Eeyore get both barrels because, Jane, this is not my fault. Like, the fuck it isn't. It's right. So easy to avoid that guy, not least because in most of his scenes, he is wearing a 3-bedroom condominium as a jacket, and I don't know how you even got close enough to make out with him.
Well,
shut up, yeah. Addison.
Also, just like, not to mention the fact that you work with him, like, just if nothing else, draw a line as a professional that, like, you're not going to shit where you eat. That's what most people do, even if you weren't in a relationship, which you also are. Like, duh.
I mean, I don't know. Like, some of this, I guess we have to forgive her because she's on a soap opera and they're already getting set to, like, flip the chessboard in the air and see where everyone lands. But shut up, Allison.
Yeah. Of course, but it's also asking us to forget how mad she got at Billy for going to a party at Michael's house, because that was like 5 episodes ago.
Like, oh, yeah. Well, they didn't have to ask me. I did forget about that. So thank you for bringing it up.
Now and forever, shut up, Allison. And thank you, Jane, for telling her so. Good Lord. Anyway, the next day, stupid Allison is at work flirting with Steve on the phone / near the fax machine when Joe appears with some proofs. She is very ready to depart again when Allison refuses to give her space in clip 5.
That was Steve on the phone. He said to tell you he sends his best. Joe, please. We're friends. Can't we straighten this out?
I don't see how.
Look. I am honestly sorry things didn't work out between you and Steve. I did not mean to get in the way, but this is all just a misunderstanding. I'm with Billy, you know that. Steve is the one who made the mistake, and I know that he's sorry too. He is really a good guy. He's just... He's sensitive and maybe a little impulsive and I guess indecisive, I don't know. Anyway, I know... He didn't mean to hurt anybody.
You should hear yourself.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're really with Billy, maybe you should concentrate on him instead of going on and on about your sensitive friend, Steve.
The kick is good.
Honest to God, she deserves that so much.
She so does.
Oof. Apparently, it hits home because when Billy gets home from work that night, he is surprised to see that Allison's in her robe and has made a fancy dinner for the two of them. She claims it's an apology for her having been so nuts at work and ignoring him. And after downplaying the chicken cordon bleu she's made as a boil in bag situation, they start making out and he realizes she's naked under her robe. She says that's his appetizer. Ugh, okay.
Barf.
Seriously. Some number of days later, Billy comes to pick up Allison at the office after she's been working late. When she goes to make a copy, he's sitting at her desk when her computer lets him know there is an email message waiting for Allison Parker. The notification, I mean, I don't know if this is contemporary to the time. I didn't have email it then, but it's gorgeous. Obviously, you can see in the visual aids, thanks to Sarah. And instead
I mean, it's every Chicago fonted thing that you dream of, truly.
It really is.
Window into our past.
God, take us back there. Instead of assuming it's just going to be some boring bullshit, as any of us would now, and ignoring it, Billy clicks on it and reads a scandalous message from Steve, to wit, just a note to say, I miss you and I wish you were up here at the ranch with me. Looking forward to seeing you soon. Okay, not really that scandalous, but not really that professional either.
No.
And Billy makes like 500 confusion faces and then deletes it. And he overacts the deletion of this email so much, you would think that doing it gives him an electric shock. I made a gif of it because he like jumps. It's amazing. So check that out in the visual aids as well. Oh, that's it.
God, they put like 28 tiny mics on the mouse so that the click would sound like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like an elephant stomping on something.
A hammer coming down on an anvil. Yeah. Amazing. God. Finally, our A plot. Kimberly accepting Michael's proposal is just the start of their drama. At the hospital, Michael demands to speak to Kimberly, who is not interested. She's not mad, she says. She's just busy. He claims he finally sees that she's been there for him the whole time and he's never appreciated it, but now he does and he loves her and doesn't want anyone but her forever. She glares at him gloriously, which you can see in the visual aids. He will do anything to get her back. She states that, as they have agreed, they are just work colleagues now, but Michael says he can see she's lying. He's the expert in that, not her, she says. Another direct hit. Go out for lunch with Joe. You should be friends. Anyway, it won't work with Michael, but still. That night, Kimberly gets in her car, once again parked directly in front of the hospital, and almost has a heart attack when she sees that Michael is asleep in the front seat waiting for her. So creepy.
It really is. It made me laugh, though, because I drive a smart car, not for long, because now we have too many pets and we need a bigger car. But one of their big advertising pushes in Europe was a montage of horror movies and thrillers where someone was lurking in the back seat. And then the tagline was like, in a smart, this will never happen to you.
It's very good.
Yeah, it's a point of view. I laughed. Anyway, Michael's a creep.
Indeed, and she orders him to get out of the car so that she can go home. But first, he wants to tell her that she was right. He has been a liar. Nice verb choice. And though he doesn't deserve her, he is changing. Kimberly can't take this anymore. Michael whines that he ruins everything. He loves her so much, and she doesn't love him anymore. And he starts to obviously fake cry, but she falls for it, saying that isn't true. She does not love him anymore. So then he starts laughing as he admits that he's trying to wear her down. He claims he's getting help. No evidence of this that the viewer has seen, of course, and that he can't live without her. Even if she decides not to take him back, he'll always love her. And he asks if he can take her out again, and she gives him a maybe, but tells him again that he has to get out of the car, and so he finally does. But before he closes the door, he says he loves her, and she smiles as she says, they'll see. And then drives off as he does a fist pump and a yes. And, oh, Kimberly. And poor Kimberly, as we see next.
Oh, God.
Has let Michael talk her into dinner, although she doesn't look very celebratory as she regards her champagne. He sounds pretty drunk already as he blathers on about how badly he's been sleeping in the beach house without her. She thinks what's been keeping him up wasn't loud waves, but his guilty conscience. And he pours her some more while she declines. He asks if she's afraid her libido might get loose, but she throatily says that happened a while ago. Ew. She wants him to take her home, but he has something to give her first, and it's an engagement ring. Clip six.
What is this?
Marry me, Kimberly.
Has your guilty conscience made you crazy? What? I know you don't mean this. I was there for your first marriage, remember?
Come on, I'm not crazy. I'm dead serious now. I love you very much.
Damn you, Michael. If only you'd done it a month ago.
Nothing would have changed. He would have still been an asshole. Like,
yeah,
really?
Except then you'd have been engaged instead of just in a relationship. Like, ugh.
Yeah. Like, you're already living together. What's the difference, really? Anyway, she takes off. When she's gone, he pours the rest of the bottle into his glass. And then she lets him drive. This doctor, who has presumably treated lots of victims of drunk driving accidents. Okay.
And isn't it her car as well?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, he's a man, so.
Yeah. And this is Melrose. Mm-hmm.
So he's blinking at the lights and distracted by the radio and fidgeting with the ring, which she gets out of his jacket to try to re-propose with. And then he drops it and has to swerve to avoid hitting a parked car. And Kimberly, freaked out, finally asks the question she should have asked before getting in the car. Clip 7.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm fine. Now, come on, try it on just to see
what
it looks
like.
No,
I know you. This is some kind of trap.
No, this is the new me, you know, sensitive, honest.
Oh, I hate that sensitive man thing. You know, I...
Come on,
where's the red I love?
Oh, come on.
No, no, not the ring. No, I'm not the kind of girl. Oh, how many carrots is that? Oh, God.
Beautiful. Come on, say it.
All right. I'll marry you.
Oof. So what you heard was them obviously crashing. After commercials, the car is resting on its roof as first responders arrive on the scene. Michael is conscious but bloody, but tells the cop in the window he can't move. Kimberly is not conscious. Michael feels for her pulse and starts moaning in anguish. And then we're watching Michael get wheeled into a hospital, mumbling that Kimberly can't be dead. Dr. Russia, hair just every damn where, by the way, classic TV style.
Yeah, Jesus. I'm not a crackpot, but put your fucking hair up. Hello. Yeah.
So she's the treating physician. She yells out orders. Kimberly's on the gurney behind Michael's and still not awake. Dr. Russia sticks her fingers into Kimberly's neck brace and yells that they've lost the pulse. It's a code blue. And Sydney, as you will recall, was on her way out to her big date with Carl when she runs into Matt, who tells her about the car accident. Sydney immediately ditches the date and tells Matt she'll pass on the news to Jane, who's not sure how to feel about it, particularly since she was pretty obviously mid-sex with Robert when Sydney showed up. Sydney just tells Jane to get dressed, she'll drive, but then Robert comes out and complicates things in clip 8.
What's going on?
Oh, I didn't know you had company. Michael's in the hospital. He's been in an accident.
Jane, if you have to go, go.
Right, like she needs your permission. It's her husband, for God's sakes. No, he's not. Not anymore. What are you saying? We're divorced, Sydney. Try to understand that. I don't wish him any harm. I'll call the hospital and see how he's doing, but I'm not going to stand at his bedside. Are you crazy? Michael could die and you're going to stay here with your lover? How can you be so heartless and cold? Can't you stop thinking about yourself for 1 minute? Go, Sydney, get out. Michael was right. You are a horrible, unfeeling bitch.
I think that when your very acrimonious divorce happened, like, 3 weeks ago, you can see how things play out and go see him, like, the next day.
Yeah. I mean, also, I don't understand Sydney's, Like, I understand her sort of angle trying to ally herself against Jane with Michael, I guess. But like everything she's saying, the dialogue in this scene is all sort of designed to get Sydney to accept the fact that like mom and dad aren't getting back together, which should be what Sydney wants.
Mm-hmm.
So like, why is the writing making it out like Sydney is the one who's like, oh no, he's still your husband. Like, I just don't understand what they think she's thinking, but I guess if the idea is that she has a borderline personality, maybe it coheres a little better, at least for her.
Right. I mean, I think she's thinking like, I'm not with him and I want to be with him. So therefore Jane must feel the same. I don't know.
Yeah. But then if Jane is going to step out of the way, then let right. that happen. That should be what you want. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway,
doesn't matter.
Does not, because Jane doesn't go. Cut to the hospital, where Dr. Rusha tells Michael he has severe back injuries that will probably require surgery. He asks about Kimberly. They don't know what's up with her yet, but she's stable. Michael demands that Dr. Rusha tell him, doctor to doctor, what's going on, and she intensely says that Kimberly has a lot of problems, including severe head injuries, and it's very serious. And in the waiting room, Matt is briefing Billy and Allison on the little he knows. And Billy is trying to get out of spending the night there while Michael and Kimberly are in surgery, which I don't blame him, though Allison overrules him because Jane will need them whenever she shows up, which Allison assumes she's going to.
Or that she'll want to talk to Allison. Like, just mind your own business.
Yeah, great point. I forgot. That was just like that morning. Anyway.
Yeah.
Then Sydney shows up in a tizzy, clip 9.
Where the hell did you go? I ran out front and everybody left. It took me forever to get a cab.
Sydney, I thought you were coming with Jane.
Where's Michael?
No, he's about to... Calm down. He's about to rush in the surgery.
Sydney,
Sydney,
no,
you can't. Sydney, no.
I have to!
Kimberly is going to be in the operating room right next door.
Michael!
Sydney!
Let me see him. I love him so much. Get her out of here.
I'm trying, doctor.
Hey.
Michael. I love you.
This is all you. This is all your fault. You shouldn't come between us. Just know what happened. Stay away from me.
Wow.
Ouch.
To take time out of your day when you're like at death's door to be this shitty. It's really, really remarkable. Anyway, he's on his stomach on his way to surgery when the cop from the scene comes in wanting to test Michael to see if the accident was alcohol related. And as Dr. Rusha gets rid of the cop, fucking Calabro's eyes snap open. He's so good. So Sydney then is out in the waiting room blending into the chair, which is weirdly the same exact color as her dress, when you can see this in the visual aids, when Matt returns, kindly bringing coffee and trying to get her to talk. And is this their first one-on-one scene? Are we watching Laura Layton and Doug Savant fall in love?
I don't know.
Unclear. She claims she's all right. Matt then swerves to offer some advice, which is Michael is probably not going to be available to her as a friend for a while. Maybe there's
so
a chance.
Put.
I know, so social workery. But maybe there's a chance that with some counseling, Sydney could repair her relationship with Jane. He could recommend someone. And the exchange that follows this is kind of perfect. Clip 10.
Matt, can I tell you something? You're a sweet guy and all. But you don't know what the hell you're talking about. My sister's a witch. And Michael and I have something very special that you couldn't understand.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. About that. Anyway, he doesn't bother to argue with her. He just wraps it up by saying if she ever wants to talk, she knows where to find him, and she snaps at him to butt out. Finally, Amanda and Jake get there. Billy sits up off of Allison's lap, wiping drool off his mouth. Joe is apparently right behind them. And at the bar the next day, Ellen tells Sydney how she fucked up with both Carl and Lauren and then pretends to care what happened with Michael, not very convincingly. Sydney says he might be paralyzed, and Ellen's reaction is basically, ooh, drag. And Sydney then continues to talk delusionally in clip 11.
He's not only my brother-in-law, he's kind of my boyfriend.
God. Sydney?
Yeah, and we had this understanding, right? But now, because of the accident and my sister and her friends all crazy, we have to play cool, which is hard for both of us.
Your sister doesn't know.
She knows. But she pretends, you know. She can never satisfy him. Anyway, now he doesn't want to hold me back. So I'm just going to kind of date around until things get straightened out.
Well, you come off all innocent, but you really know your way around, don't you? I'll talk to Lauren. Maybe we could see what Carl and his friend are doing tonight. Would you like to finally check out the Hyena Club?
Sure. Why not?
Yes, the Hyena Club did come back. Joke's on me. Cut to Michael in the hospital being belligerent. Clip 12.
I'm told, Dr. Petrova, I'm going to be fine. I've been studying in this country a little longer than you, and our medical knowledge is a little bit more advanced.
That may be so. I was just saying.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and what I'm telling you is that I'll be walking as well as you do once the trauma subsides.
I'm sorry, Michael. There are no guarantees.
Stop playing this game with me. This is temporary, and you know it.
Fine. However you want it. He's all yours.
Not only did he take time right before surgery to blame Sydney for the car crash in which he drove drunk, but having just woken up from surgery, he's like being a xenophobe immediately.
Yeah,
that's a pro.
It's remarkable. So yeah, that was He's All Yours is Dr. Rusha talking to Matt, who's entering with some neurology textbooks that Michael requested. He asks about Kimberly, and Matt hesitantly admits that she still hasn't regained consciousness. And once that's out of the way, Michael turns to the second most important matter, himself. He tells Matt how he heard the cop talk about his blood alcohol level, and obviously Matt asks if Michael had been drinking. Michael says he had a little, and that Kimberly had too, which, like, she wasn't driving, so what's the difference? But now the new legal limit is so low, he still might be in trouble, particularly if Kimberly dies, in which case Michael could be charged with manslaughter. That's where Matt comes in. Clip 13.
But if I had a friend who could get access or had access to the hospital computer, he could change a couple of numbers for me.
Are you nuts? Michael, not only do I have major problems with this ethically, but it's illegal.
You show your ethics, Matt. I could end up in prison and never practice medicine again over one stupid mistake. I wasn't really that drunk. We were just goofing around in a car. And she grabbed the steering wheel.
Michael, I can't do this.
Fine. You stay pure. And I'll be locked up. My life will be over. But you'll be able to sleep at night, Matt. Because you never broke one of your own rules. Even for a friend.
Michael, there is a chance.
Look. Why don't you go back to that job I got you? I should have known I couldn't ask you for a favor.
I mean, he's just the best at being the worst.
Yeah, like, he really is.
The way he knows... I mean, I hate to use the word emotional intelligence about someone who's such a worm, but like he just knows what buttons to push with everyone. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah. And he can manage to sort of blackmail Matt, even though if Matt sits down to think about it, it's like, well, then let him try.
Well, yeah.
You shouldn't have told anyone about this situation anyway or engaged in it. But it's like he really is an expert, and Matt is such a doormat, truly.
Mm-hmm. It's true. After the commercial, Jane shows up. Michael puts on a show of bravado for her, but admits when she asks that he can't feel much. She's already gotten the report on Michael's status from Matt and calls him a great guy. Matt, obviously, not Michael, which Michael can't contradict, so it's convenient that he can instead ask Jane to hold the water glass for him because his hands are shaky from the drugs. Apparently, this is too intimate for her because she kind of freaks out and says she has to go. Michael asks if they can be friends. He knows he's done a lot of bad things, but it's all water under the bridge now, which is kind of for her to say, not him, which,
yeah,
you know.
That's not how that expression works.
No, and she doesn't agree, saying it's so much water, there's not much of a bridge, which, you know, good. But on her way out, Jane sees Kimberly's name on the door of her room and goes in to see Kimberly looking rough. She's hooked up to lots of machines, bandages all around her head, and the engagement ring on her finger under a little piece of tape. And Jane covers it back up again and backs out of the room like Homer into the hedge in the GIF that we all know and love. That night, Sydney's on her date with Carl, the insufferable bore, flattering his driving and teeing him up to bore her some more about a competitive driving course he took. He continues to be unbearable when she compliments his house, and he volunteers that he paid cash for it out of all the grosses for some movie he made. And since he's being so receptive to everything she says, she keeps going in clip 14.
Think you might want to let me visit the set of one of your movies sometime?
Anything can happen, sweetheart. But that's unlikely.
Come on, Carl. I won't embarrass you.
I'll get us something to drink. Why don't you take your clothes off and get comfortable?
Yeah, right.
Is there a problem?
No.
Then take off your damn clothes.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Lauren's girls always want the money up front.
Oh boy. So
yeah.
So he drops what looks like, I would say, $1,000 cash. Would you agree that it looked like that much? He sort of counts it, but we don't see it.
Yeah, he was counting it for a while. I was going to say, like, based on how long he's peeling bills off, like, we're supposed to think they're hundreds, but it was like, you were counting for a while. Like,
yeah.
How expensive are Lauren's girls? Like, what?
Right.
What extras are expected here? But also, I mean, look, obviously, if she doesn't want anything to happen, etc.
Right.
What did she think she was there for? Her sparkling conversation? She's a waitress.
Well,
no offense, waitresses.
But she did. Like, I mean, she's definitely being naive, but like no one said this is the deal.
Yeah, that's true. And I really feel like after she very choreographically flees from the house, that her first call should be to Ellen to be like, what the fuck?
Right.
Because, dude, you've had so many opportunities to at least hint that this is what the deal is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe Ellen would say, well, what did you think was the situation when I showed you my Rolex and said it was a gift? Like, where did you think it came from? Like, yes, Sydney should have put the pieces together, but she didn't, and no one spelled it out for her. So, like, she never got the opportunity to, you know, affirmatively choose whether she wanted to get into sex work, because no one even has quoted her a price. Like, you know,
yeah.
You would think that would be the baseline of, like, well, decide if you want to do it. It pays X, you know, like, at least know what your quote is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
And like how you prove you're not a cop. I mean, what do I know? But it's like, it's so funny too, because this character yaws between extremely naive and clueless and extremely desperate and manipulative mm-hmm. in a way that I think is like, I think maybe we didn't sufficiently appreciate it when it first aired.
Yeah.
That this feels like it's a perfect soap opera character, but it's also so pitiable.
Yes.
When she's like, hold on. Like you really sort of believe that she had no idea that after a date with a Hollywood big shot, that he would be expecting anything.
Right.
She's just like, can I visit the set of your movie? Like, what is this? A Make-A-Wish
right.
event? Like, so yeah, I mean, her portrayal, like Laura Layton is just so good. This character is fascinating.
Yes. And the other thing annoying. That you notice if you watch the scene is that even though she, you know, she gets up and leaves and he gets, you know, he's like, whatever, I'm sick of this act. I don't get it. What are you doing? You know, even as she's on her way out, he's like, lift your skirt up. But even as this is all happening, Laura Layton makes the very smart choice of like looking from him to the money over and over again, which is like such a smart way to play it to, you know, to tip us to how this is actually going to go.
Yeah.
She's very good.
Yeah, she is.
So over to the hospital, where Matt goes to a computer and calls up Michael's test results, which say he had a blood alcohol level of 0.15. So for fun, I looked up the number to be charged with a DWI in Texas, and that number is 0.08. So Michael was rocking almost double that. Cool. And I feel like now it would not be possible for Matt to change results that had been recorded in a system like this without leaving, you know, a trace of like who logged in and what changes were made.
Yeah, I feel like it probably wasn't even possible then.
Well, yeah, it's been at least a day since the accident. So presumably like the cops would already have the information on the original report, but whatever.
I'm pretty sure this comes up again because there is some sort of dig sig that Matt's like, okay. What? These things are tracked in a question mark? And you're like, oh, Matt, please have some agency in your own life. This is sad.
For now, he changes the number to 0.06. So that's where we leave it with Matt mortgaging his future again. Oh, Matt. And that's it. So let us close it up by naming our episode MVP.
I actually did not mind that delay because I still can't choose who is my MVP, but I'm going to go with, this is tough. I'm going to go with Joe. Your sensitive friend, Steve, was really a withering line reading and she doesn't get much else to do in the episode, but she makes the most of it.
I agree with you, but just so that we're not so matchy-matchy, I'm going to say Jane for reading Allison as too few people do other than Amanda. You know, this gives us a chance to mix it up because she was totally right and Allison's full of shit.
Yeah, it's true.
Least valuable player. I mean, Michael, the guy who almost killed someone.
Yeah, I mean, he is the best at being the worst, but he's still the worst.
Yes.
Is the thing about that.
He really is.
Next time on Again With This, Kimberly's family comes to take her home, Sydney redefines family with Lauren as her den mother, and there's probably a family affair joke involving the Billis-and-Teve love triangle, but I can't quite get to it. You'd better get to some Malox before you peep our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com, which is where you can also pre-order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book. It went to print today as we're recording this. It's really happening. It's really not a bit. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm sunken Days of Our Lives ship, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is my sensitive friend, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, always wants the money up front. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?
I always forget these and then I'm delighted.
Sorry. The clip program changed the way you drag and drop.
It's so annoying.
It's so fucking annoying.
Stop four packing them. It's so annoying.
I wrote to them to complain. They're like, why are you doing this very opinionated way of dragging in things? Like, just fill them up if they're blank.
I actually wrote them a note and was like, can we not?
You both did? Aw, two crackpots.
Well, you used to just drag them in. It would just be like 1 to 10. If you put 13, it would just be like the first 13 things. And now it puts them in like, it tries to form squares.
Right.
And it just moves everything else around.
I don't think that either of you is wrong. I just find it funny that independently you both wrote them a note that was like, look, assholes, about this clip program.
Yeah, it was like, you know, bonding with Dave about this is not adequate.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.